You're a musician who wears many different hats. Primarily, you're a cellist with the Boston Symphony Orchestra. But there's so many other parts of your musical persona that I want to talk about. What was it like, first of all, you're from France. What was it like as a youngster growing up and discovering your love for music there? What turned you on?
Well, I grew up in a musical family in the sense that my parents loved music. They were not professional musicians, but my brother also played the cello. He's actually a very good cellist, and my dad played the piano, my mom dabbled in violin and choir singing. So there was music around me, and I think it was very natural hearing my brother play the cello all the time to be attracted to that very instrument. So that's kind of how it started, and I fell in love with it right away, and I always say I never questioned I would be a cellist. It just took me a while to understand I would have to work for it.
And who did you study with?
Well, I had a teacher in Strasbourg whom I started with called Miska Temesvari, who's Hungarian and who was a very good first teacher, very good technique teaching. And then I had a couple of teachers in Montpellier and Paris, most of them who were students of Janos Starker, so that's kind of my background. And then I studied with Philippe Muller in Paris, who was a student of André Navarra. And later on, I was greatly influenced by Bernard Greenhaus of the Beaux-Arts Trio and my teacher, Lawrence Lesser, in Boston.
In Boston. You were 14 years old when you made your debut in France, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
What did you play?
I played the Haydn C major, cello concerto, which, you know, C major is good. It's an easy key. So that's how I started. It was a great time, and I was lucky to have this opportunity. At the time.
What was the thing that changed everything for you when you came to the United States and you studied over here? How did that happen?
Well, I came primarily to actually study with Mr. Greenhouse, who used to live on Cape Cod. So he told me, you should come to Boston. You can study with Lawrence Lesser and you can also take lessons with me on the Cape. So that was my reason for coming. Also, I have to say, being in Boston at a New England Conservatory, I learned so much about chamber music. That's something that I didn't quite do as much in France. And I arrived here, I had no idea what the Brahms sextets were. And I spent so much time reading chamber music with my friends and learning about it. And that really nourished my musical life in a great way.
Interesting, because Leonard Bernstein, I remember one brief quote he said, "It's all chamber music." So, from chamber music to playing the symphonic repertoire, what's that transition like as a cellist?
Well, I guess in a way it's similar. I mean, cellists already, we're used to play a bass role, so we like to support, we like to listen to others do well. Of course, I think there's also a quote from Seiji Ozawa saying it's ultra music and that the orchestra likes to remind each new player coming into the orchestra. But you have to listen, you have to blend. For me, being in a cello section, I love just the sound of the cello section. I think if one cello sounds good, 10 cellos sounds even better, So I really love that sound, and it's something I don't really yearn to be heard on my own. I just really love being a part of the group. And so that's the way it is for the cello section, and that's the way it is in the orchestra in a bigger way.
Sometimes certain passages in that cello section in the orchestral repertoire, particularly in the music of Verdi, which was performed at Tanglewood just last night, Tosca. The first act of Tosca, but then we had the beautiful aria from Don Carlo that Brent Terfel sang in that beautiful cello passage that Verdi wrote, played by, so beautifully by Martha Babcock last night. I always am reminded the cello reminds me of the tenor in opera. Do you sense that?
It's definitely a voice. I mean, it's people always say it's the closest to the human voice, and it's very true. It's very true, and there's something about the cello that makes it very noble and very honest, I think, as an instrument. And it fits the opera repertoire very well.
Mm-hmm. Wait, how about jazz? Were you listening to jazz when you were growing up, or did you have any favorite? France is so well known. We have names like Claude Bolling, Stefan Grappelli, Michel Legrand.
Mm-hmm.
who made the crossover into jazz.
I listen to a lot of jazz. I mean, my dad actually loves to play the jazz classics on the piano, like Dave Brubeck and Duke Ellington and Count Basie. So I really grew up going to bed with hearing my father playing Take Five on the piano. So that's kind of my jazz education, and then I listened to many artists later on. I'm a big fan of blues. That's something I listen to a lot. I always had other interests. I had a hip hop phase, reggae, electronic music. So I'm going a bit through everything. But yeah, I think you can nourish your musical life really from all kinds of styles. And it's not because you like classical music you can't listen to something else.
Which gets us into the topic of the Boston Cello Quartet with your colleagues. That was your idea, wasn't it? Was it a combination with you?
Well, I used to have a cello quartet in Paris when I was a student, and that was short-lived because it was just not the right time. Each cellist went their own way, and I thought when I joined the orchestra it would be a perfect time because most people who get that sort of job want to stay here. So I thought we might all be around for a while, and it just happened I got in the orchestra with two other young cellists, Alexandre Carman and Adam S. Benson. And I knew a bit Michal Georgia too from before, and so I asked them if they would be okay just putting together a concert for Tanglewood, actually a prelude concert. And they said yes, and then people wanted to hear us again, and we got more concerts, and that's how it got rolling.
So. I tell you, it was a big success. I remember when I got a copy of it, and I played it when I left Tanglewood on the, what we call it, Tanglewood Turnpike, all the way from Lee all the way to the Alston exit. And it was just great traveling music. The Marriage of Figaro, which was in there, and all those other things. You do jazz too.
We have some jazzy pieces written for us, and we have a project next year. We want to start working on the music of Thelonious Monk. So there will probably be an expanded group with maybe bass and drum set and vibraphone, something like that.
You got a lot to choose from in that repertoire. You know,
yes.
You have the Charlie Parker things. You mentioned Duke Ellington. So many of them, I would assume, would lend themselves to the sound of four cellos playing like you guys play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I always say I think four cellos can play anything, so we do have a wide choice.
I want to talk about, again, pick up with your relationship with Boston. You're on the Cape. And when did you decide to audition for this orchestra? And tell us a bit about the audition process.
Well, I took my first audition. I took two auditions for the orchestra. My first one was my second year of master's in Boston. And I got to the finals. I was the last one standing, but they didn't give me the job. So I could have gone back to France right away, but I thought it might be worth it to try once again. And then, of course, if they don't take me this time, I'll definitely go back. And they kept me the second time. So that's why I stayed. The audition process is very, very tough, and especially tough mentally. And I think, you know, people say, oh, it's so amazing you won the job young. It's actually easier to win the job when you're young. When you're in school, you're constantly, you know, practicing, working, somewhat being competitive with your fellow students in a good way. I was doing international competitions. So in a way, for me, doing the audition, you know, I had played the Rococos in Finland a few months before, and then I was playing behind the screen. It didn't feel as daunting as before. If I was aware that I was, you know, going to get a good paycheck and benefits and all that, it would probably be a much more daunting task. So, yeah, I think mentally it was a good time for me.
And you got the job.
Yes, I was lucky to get the job.
It must have been a period when you finished your audition, a waiting period. How long a period was that before you got the news? I mean,
there was a lot of waiting.
Really?
Because, you know, you have several rounds, and I think what happened for my second audition is they added extra rounds because they just couldn't separate people. So you thought you were done, and then you had to play again. So it was really, really nerve-wracking. And, I was glad. No, from my first audition, I was aware that you can go very far and not get the job. So the second time around, you know, I was seeing a bit like a like a tie break in a tennis game. Like you can't let any point go away. So you have to stay focused until the very, very, very end, until they tell you you have the job or you don't have the job. So that was my mindset, really, to stay focused.
In your world, as a cellist, there's so many things that are involved. I mean, you're a composer, you're an arranger, you've written pieces. You have a piece for 12 cellos.
Yeah, it's mostly an arrangement.
Occasionally you like to pick up the harmonica too.
Yes.
And get away from the cello. Tell us about that experience with Keith Lockhart and the Pops.
Well, that was, at least I think that was John Newman, was or David Newman.
Oh, David Newman.
Yeah, conductor.
Yeah, famous guy in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, it's kind of a very, very funny gig for me to think that I basically played one melody with the Pops at Tango at the Shed. And it was probably a once in a lifetime opportunity. I don't know if they will ever hire me again. But it was fantastic. You know, I picked up the harmonica when I was in high school in France, and I had my best friend play the guitar and introduced me to Eric Clapton. And so I really got into blues. And you know, being a cellist, carrying your cello case around all day long, the harmonica is very attractive. It's small and it fits in the pocket, and it's a very versatile instrument. So I really got into it, and I play at home mostly, and I hope I can improve.
Of course, you must know Toots.
Yes, of course, Toots Hielemans.
Toots Hielemans, yeah. I used to play a lot of his vinyl.
Yeah.
And I interviewed him once. Remarkable, remarkable musician. He played, I'll never forget in the studio, he played a little bit of the theme of La Forza del Destino, da da di da da da, on the harmonica.
This is vibrato.
The studio, I love Verdi, he said, you know. Okay, now listen to this. You also, I can't believe what you've done, and you're still young, launched Opus Cello, an online sheet music publishing company. That was back in 2013. Mm-hmm. Where are you going with that?
Well, it kind of all goes back to the cello quartet. So when we started with the cello quartet, I felt we needed to have some original music that would be specific to the group. So I thought, okay, I'll just write arrangements for us, which is what I did. So, you know, I probably wrote, I don't know, 30 arrangements for cello quartet. And people were starting to ask me for that sheet music. And I didn't want to give it all away, but I thought it would be nice at some point to share some of it. And the online platform seemed the best idea. So I just put together that website. People can download the PDF file and print at home. And then I just thought I should arrange for other ensembles. So I arranged for cello duos, cello trios, cello octets, 12 cellos. You know, I think cellists like to play together historically. So my first goal was really not to make money at all. It was just for it to be self-sustained. And it is doing well, and I was able to expand to actually print some scores. So some sheet music stores in Boston and Chicago and Paris are carrying them.
Yeah.
And I'm very happy it's doing well.
On your instrument, of course, the great legends, the Casals, and who so famous, Starker, all of these great men, and of course, Yo-Yo Ma. I mean, you can't in this world today conceive of music without Yo-Yo Ma.
Yeah.
And where does he stand in the legacy of artists that you work with?
Well, I mean, he's very high. And, you know, of course, I got to enjoy his playing a lot because he plays with us every year in Boston and at Tanglewood. So it's been a treat to be able to hear him so often here. And it's tremendous to think we're going to work with him at the end of the summer. With the cello quartet and Mike Block and Giovanni Soliman, Monica Lescovar. We have this 8 cellos concert coming up. So he's very, very inspiring, and it's kind of mind-blowing to me that he can still play the Dvorak concerto in such an inspired way after he probably played it thousands of times, and it just sounds so fresh and so convincing and so musical. So he's really an inspiring figure, and also just as a human being, he's so good at connecting with people, at getting the best out of people. So he's a very, very positive figure, I think, in the musical world at large.
I always thought of him as kind of like the Pied Piper of Hamelin, you know, where young kids follow this man around with a cello. He's got this magnetism where he just draws you in, you know, and the people in the audience that aren't musicians feel it. And you, as a cellist, have this wonderful insight into what he's doing in the instrument. What is it that makes him unique? That what is that characteristic in his playing?
Oh, my God. That's a tough question.
What do you hear that we don't as non-musicians?
No, you know, I think he's just a very good musician, so that comes to, you know, how he's going to maybe pace the dynamics or the vibrato, or but it's mostly about music. It's mostly about shaping phrases and the overall shape of the piece, and he's very, very smart about that, I think.
It's interesting you would say that, because there's something, an analogy there with, for example, Frank Sinatra, the great singer of the American songbook, phrasing.
Yeah.
He knew how to phrase, he knew how to lay back the legato and all of that, which, of course, Yo-Yo is capable of doing on his instrument, singing with the cello.
Absolutely.
Wonderful analogy there. Okay, I know you like cartoons, I believe, right? Or can you tell us about your experience with the cartoons, because I love animation.
Yes. Well, I mean, I've been mostly interested in comic books, which is what when I grew up as a child, I didn't have TV. So actually, I didn't get to watch the Looney Tunes on TV, but I did have comic books. So in France, it would be names like Asterix or Lucky Luke or Bully Bill. I don't know who in America would know those, but so those were kind of my fun things to read when I was at home as a child. So I always loved them. I recently made sure to complete my collection of Asterix books. It's you know, I like humor. I like, I guess I like positive things. Most cartoons are pretty positive. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's kind of how I got into it.
I want to also ask you about, you know, what you experience out here in Tanglewood, this very special place. Where everybody is sort of laid back, and Boston Symphony is one big family. And of course, now we're taking it in a new direction with your new music director, Andres Nelsons. The experience of Tanglewood and what that means to you.
Well, I always say when I first come to Tanglewood at the start of the season and I enter the grounds, I feel my shoulders dropping. You know, because it's just so beautiful. It's so inspiring also to play music in such a space, you know, connected with nature. You know, whether you play the Beethoven Pastoral and the birds are singing like they are now, or you play Rite of Spring and there's a thunderstorm going on in the shed, you know, it really connects you with nature. And it's just a beautiful place. You know, for me, I like to play golf, so that's something I can do here in between rehearsals. It's just people like to hike. We play soccer games with the Tanglewood fellows. It's a fun place to be.
And we also, you work among the very best of the young musicians who study here in the TMC Orchestra. And that brings me to ask you a question. I mean, you've already established yourself and come so far in your career doing many different things in music. What kind of advice can you give to the youngsters starting out who come here to succeed?
That's also a tough question. I think, you know, you want to keep your ears and your eyes open to anything that can be inspiring to you, whether it's in music, whether it's in visual arts. When you're young, you really want to practice. When I was in school, I didn't go out that much, but I did practice, and that's probably why I'm here now. So that's the best time to practice when you don't have kids, you don't have to make a living. So I was lucky to connect with great musicians like Bernard Greenhouse, also Leon Fleischer earlier, which really greatly influenced me and I know taught me things that nobody else could have taught me. So if you can get in touch with very important musicians and learn from them, I think it's the best thing you can do for your musical life.
And it's important, I would imagine, never to get discouraged. Just keep going forward.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
Never look back.
Absolutely. Actually, when I look back on what I did as a student, I wish I tried more things. I wish I did more competitions and you know, of course, nobody likes competitions, but that's how you know, you learn how to deal with your nerves and you see where you're standing. And that's the time to try things, the time to experiment, the time to work. It's a great time.